I started to see that there was a trend, but not a trend of commonality. It was people saying they were lazy, but having different reasons for what that meant to them.
It's what I call in Rewire Your Mindset the I'll be happy win fallacy.
People are intimidated by the task at hand. Sometimes a goal that feels too big can be really intimidating, and there's fear around it.
Hi, I'm Lisa Davis. So glad you're listening to Health Power. I discovered today that there are 7 types of laziness. And the reason I discovered it is I was researching my fantastic guest, Brian King. Over the past 7 years, Brian has gone from working full-time as a school teacher to one of Ireland and the UK's leading thought leaders on all things health, fitness, and nutrition. Brian is the author of 2 bestsellers, A Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset. And so much more. I'm going to put his entire fantastic bio in the show notes. I'm going to read both of his books and have him back to get Brian. Welcome to the show. It's so good to have you.
Lisa, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, I had so much fun this morning going through your social media. Your videos are great and they're quick and they're interesting. And I was thinking, you know, when you think of laziness, I just thought maybe there's one type, or sometimes I feel like, you know, I have a lot of neurodiverse friends and family in my life. And so a lot of people with ADHD get labeled as lazy when there's really something called ADHD paralysis. If you don't know about it, Google it, because it's a real thing. And you want to do those dishes. You want to clean your room, but it literally, you're just the way your mind is wired. But I didn't realize that just for, sounds like just neurotypical people, or maybe even people who are neurodiverse, there is 7 types of laziness. So jump into this for us, because I find it fascinating.
Yeah, it's a great question, Lisa. And the kind of the way I got to this was I was spending years working at the time as a one-to-one personal trainer and a nutritionist with people. And in 2016, I moved online. And something that always fascinated me about fitness and health and wellness was most people have a good idea what they need to do.
Yes.
Move more, you know, eat more whole foods, try and sleep 8 hours a night. And again, there's a little bit of argument in between all of these things, but for the most part, that works for 95% of people. But a lot of people couldn't stick to a food plan, or they couldn't stick to a training program, or they couldn't even stick to a sleep schedule. And I started to look into the kind of the mindset side of things. And something that kept coming up with clients that I was working with online in particular was, oh, I'm lazy. And I started to see that there was a trend, but not a trend of commonality. It was people saying they were lazy, but having different reasons for what that meant to them. And it led me down to kind of exploring like the 7 types of laziness. And I'll run you through the 7. I have them in front of me here because I always forget one when I'm running through a list of 7.
Confusion. Well, 7 is a lot.
Yeah, 7 is a lot. Confusion is the first one, where people don't know what to do or where to start. Apathy, they feel like they don't care about it. It's kind of the sour grapes, where they see that it'll take a lot of work to put in. Oh, I don't want to eat that way, or I don't want to go to the gym, or I don't want to hit a step count every year. That's a lot of hassle. And they convince themselves that actually, you know, I don't really want to do that anyway. Or I'm not really, I don't care as much about my health or my physical appearance. And that's okay. But when you're using it as a sign of laziness, it's something that you need to kind of unpack. Fixed mindset, they don't actually believe they can do it. Carol directed a lot of studies on this, from the growth versus fixed mindset. Lethargy, you simply don't have enough energy to focus on the task. This is something that's great with your podcast, where people can see and look at their underlying issues with food and nutrition and lifestyle. Like, if you don't have enough energy, of course you're not going to be able to go out and move more or work out or be present with your loved ones or show up the way you need to do at work. Fear, people are intimidated by the task at hand. Sometimes a goal that feels too big can be really intimidating, and there's fear around it, and people will go, okay, I'm actually afraid of that, and it'll manifest itself as a, you know, a lazy version or a lazy way of showing up in the world. Regret is another one. They feel like they've already failed, so they just start to give up. This is normally the person who starts a diet or starts a training program or starts a new program with something, and they've been conditioned to fail over and over again. Diets are really big. It's what I love about, like, that no fad diet. People who come in off the back of a fad diet, several of them more so, can be conditioned to fail and rebound with their weight or rebound with their health or rebound with their body composition. So that regret can jump in. And then the last one is identity. It's they've resigned themselves to being a lazy person, and they self-identify with that label, which is ironic, similar to what you mentioned earlier about the ADHD paralysis.
Right.
I'm very lazy in certain contexts, but I'm not lazy in others, because it depends on, well, you know, what's the circumstance? What's the... You know, I love to work out. So no one would ever say, I'm lazy when it comes to working out, but I'm the king of procrastination when it comes to sitting down and writing a chapter for a book or doing something along those lines. So I have to build systems in place around it. So there's seven types that people can confuse and can hold them back. And I'm happy to unpack all or any of them, whichever direction you'd like to go, Lisa.
Yes. Well, I'm thinking about if you could address each one, and then in terms of how do you help the people that you work with to overcome that?
The underlying factor for a lot of people who fall into the quote unquote laziness of any of these seven is they're not super clear on what they're working towards, or they're not really sure how to get there, which lies into the first one, confusion. Yes. Something I've regularly said, and I mentioned it in books, I mentioned it on podcasts, is you can't hit a target you can't see. And there's no such thing really as motivated people. There's disciplined people, and there's people who have formed good habits around a particular thing. Like someone that's into health and fitness might have good habits around food choices and good habits around movement patterns and exercising regularly. So that's not a motivated person. If you're working towards a goal, it's very easy if you're not clear on what you want as the goal and target you're hitting and you don't know how to get there, you'll start to fall into one of these traps. So I would say the first one, and the reason I put confusion as the first one, is people don't know how to get there or where to start. And that's where podcasts like this are great and coaches are great and blog posts and books. You're a big reader similar to me. I make all notes and ruin all my books with notes as well. But you can learn. If there's something that you're unfamiliar with how to do, losing weight, improving your gut health, getting better sleep, exercising more, building up a particular body part to get stronger or bigger or whatever it is you're looking to do, get leaner or toner, you can find information around that. And then that laziness tends to go away because you've seen the roadmap. It'd be the same, Lisa, if you step into your car, drive into your car and go, right, I'm going to go to New York and I'm just going to start driving. Nobody would do that. Nobody would do that. You'd be like, okay, Google Maps, or I'm going to find out how to get there and what's the best route to do it. But sometimes with health, fitness and wellness, we don't do that. And it's effectively the same thing. So confusion is probably the biggest one on the list.
Right. Now, with confusion, I would think that SMART goals comes in: small, measurable, attainable, reasonable, and timed.
One of my love-hate relationships with social media is it has set very unrealistic expectations for certain people. And I try to educate my clients on something called survivorship bias, that there you will generally have before and after photos from slimming clubs or from trainers who potentially put somebody on a very calorie restricted plan, bad diet, massively restricted calories. And if you restrict a overweight individual to 1200 calories a day, when their maintenance is probably around 2000, they're going to drop a lot of weight in a very short period of time. And then you can take a photo 12 weeks later, 6 weeks later, 4 weeks later, they'll take a photo and it'll be a dramatic change. And that's what gets posted online. That's what people see. And then there's this unrealistic expectation of somebody scrolling through going, oh my God, I look like the before photo. Look what they did in 4 weeks or 6 weeks. I could do that too. I need to follow this plan. Right. And that survivorship bias can influence people's expectations when they're going into a program with any coach or trainer, or even just something they've designed for themselves. And it's really important that you're realistic about what you're looking to achieve, but also, can you stick to it? I regularly tell people, if you can't do this diet in 6 months' time, you shouldn't be doing it for the next 6 days, because you want to build something that you can stick to over the long term. This is a big core piece of my content in the new year, because people really tend to go all or nothing in the new year. And I say, look, if you can't follow this in the middle of July, don't start it the first week of January. And that sets people up in terms of, okay, this is going to be sustainable potentially. This would give me longevity. And it's ultimately about consistency over intensity. And that's health, that's wellness, that's fitness. So it's very important to get your realistic expectations on the front end and then have a plan, whether it's food, training, sleep, a combination of all three and everything else, that you can stick to and is something that's going to be for you, because everyone square pegs into square holes. You have to be able to follow something that works for you.
Exactly. I mean, social media, there's some great things about it, but the phoniness is unbelievable.
I think one of the most underrated questions people can ask or think about is, it's what I call in Rewire Your Mindset, the I'll be happy when fallacy, where somebody come to me and they'll go, okay, I'll be happy when I drop 3 dress sizes, or I'll be happy when I lose 20 pounds. And I always bring it back and go, well, look, you can work with me. We can set up a sustainable plan. I can help you get to your goal, but I can't guarantee you'll feel happy when you get there. I can't guarantee you'll even feel more confident. You can, because the process matters. If you do it the right way, you can build a lot of confidence. Confidence is built by repeatedly keeping promises to yourself. And fitness is a great metaphor for how you can approach life in terms of setting small goals and hitting them.
Right.
But self-acceptance, I think, is the most underrated thing when it comes to health and wellness. And I'm into fitness, and I run a fitness business. I help people get in shape. And something I regularly tell people, which I get a lot of pushback from other people who work in fitness, because I get it. It's literally, I'm telling people, look, you can love yourself now. You can accept yourself now. If you want to lose weight and you want to lose a bit of body fat, or you want to tone up, amazing. I would love to help you do that. But you can accept yourself right now. You can start to love yourself right now. And it's merging all of these things together, I think, is the ultimate goal. It's kind of my mission when it comes to the message I try and put out there. I try and do it in a Trojan horse kind of way, because you have to have social media videos that trend and go viral. But then when I'm talking to people, going long form or working with them, I'm like, look, self-acceptance, self-love is the foundation pillar. And then all your health, wellness, and fitness is built upon that.
Yeah, I completely agree. So good to hear that, because, you know, I'm not a trainer. I was years ago as a personal trainer, but even then I was thinner than I am now, but I was never like ripped or anything. I was kind of like the everyday regular person. I used to teach this aerobics class. I'm terrible at teaching aerobics to these women between 55 and 70. We had the best time because I wasn't judging. They weren't judging me how badly I mean, oh my God, step aerobics, forget it. But we had fun. And we're moving our bodies. You know, I'm really into the whole joyful movement thing. Like, just do something. But again, if you do want a certain type, that's okay. Just do it safely. And Brian, I could tell, I mean, I'm really like so happy to be talking to you. I want to go back to the fear. Let's talk about fear when it comes to laziness. But I think that holds back people in many ways. What have you seen, and what advice can you give?
Fear is a very funny one, because this is the one I probably battled with the most, because fear, and unless you unpack your story, because most of the fears we have are self-created stories and limiting beliefs that we've either been given or we've picked up along the way from life experiences. Because if you think about, I always ask the question when I'm feeling fearful about something, I'm a big believer in feeling the fear and doing it anyways, but also what would the situation look like if I hit a factory reset on my life? That if I didn't have this conditioning, if I didn't have this programming, would I still be afraid of this situation? And in a lot of cases, the answer is no. And then I think, okay, I'm conditioned to be afraid here. And it's weird because fear shows up in so many different shapes and forms for different people. And I always get them first to realize it's a story and apply the acronym I use from Rewire Your Mindset, false evidence appearing real. That's what I always say for fear, false evidence appearing real. And once you get grounded in that, and you can check in, because there's a lot of stuff going on. Everyone's fear response is different. Everyone has different threat responses. There's perceived fear versus real fear. There's the anxiety and the confusion with fear. There's the body sensations, paralysis that some people get, the projection and outward anger that some people get when they're afraid of a situation, and they cope in whatever mechanism that they decided, or normally subconsciously decided over the years. So it can hold us back in lots of different shapes and forms. But what I would generally say that's actually practical advice is break whatever goal you have down into manageable parts. There's an old adage, I think it's an African proverb, about how do you eat an elephant? And the answer is you eat it bite by bite. Yeah. And it doesn't matter how big the goal is, you can break it down into smaller component parts until you hit it. 100 pounds, losing 100 pounds is a very difficult thing to do. But losing 1 pound 100 times is less difficult to do when you shift the focus, shift the wording, shift the framing of the story. Right. And you can break that down and you focus on, I call it the acronym, how can I win, W-I-N, what's important now? What can you do now in this moment, in this time, that's going to help you? And in a lot of cases, I've had clients who struggle with binge eating or portion control, where they struggle with, they'll eat one thing and then before they know it, the whole plate is gone, or the whole box of chocolates are gone, and they're like, oh, it feels like somebody else took over. And I always say, okay, that's done, we need to reset now, but how can you win now? And in a lot of cases, it's like, okay, I've overeaten, I feel horrible. I'm like, okay, don't get stuck in a shame spiral. Don't get stuck in a guilt spiral. I was like, that's only going to feed on itself and it's going to make the situation worse. Maybe you need to go for a walk in nature. Maybe you need to put something positive into your ear, like a podcast that's going to uplift you. Maybe you need to, you know, get out and be active the next day because you've extra calories now, you've extra sugar, you know, you're going to feel great in your workout tomorrow because you've got that to fuel you. So it's reframing and shifting the situation. And that fear can turn into other things, and that's when it becomes a problem. Fear in and of itself isn't actually that bad. It can paralyze some people, but it's what it leads to. It's the actions that you take then, and the shame spiral, the guilt spiral, the identity of, oh, I'm afraid and can't do anything. I'm not, you know, the confidence issue. I can't do that. I'm a failure. I said I was going to do it and I didn't do it. I always do this. And then your head is spinning all these stories.
So yeah, all the negative self-talk.
Oh, like our brains, one of the things that changed my life the most in the last 5 or 6 years, Lisa, was understanding that my brain is just a problem-seeking machine. That as soon as I fix one problem, it moves on to the next one. If I fix a problem in my relationship, it moves on to the next one. If I have an issue with, you know, trying to be worried about supporting my daughter, it moves on to the next one when that's fixed. If I didn't get to the gym and I'm not feeling good about how I physically look, I do that and then it moves on to the next problem. So. Right. If you just keep doing that, you keep doing what you're doing, you keep getting what you got. So it's just grounding yourself, being present and asking, right, what am I actually afraid of here? Where is that coming from? Sitting with that. And in a lot of cases, you know, you don't resist it because what you resist just persists. So you have to sit with it. And then when you're able to sit with it, realize where it's coming from, that can give you a lot of your power back. And then once you feel that power, that confidence, that self-worth, that self-confidence, for the lack of a better expression, you can make better decisions from that point forward and then navigate. And again, we can go in any direction you like there. I know I've gone kind of out to zoom in.
No, I love it.
But I think the macro is important for the micro, because the micro are just the decisions you make in the day-to-day. Right. The macro is where are all these stories and thoughts coming from.
Now, do you ever have people who don't eat enough? Like, I know somebody who, they don't eat enough and they're tired all the time. And I try to tell them, you need to eat more. But you have, like, if you want to work out this much, or if you want to just have energy to live, how do you deal with that?
Lethargy and not having enough energy to focus on whatever goal they're trying to hit is really common. Less common in recent years. In my early days as a trainer, it was more common. I think it was just the nature of the clientele I was working with versus my message online, which brings in people with different pain points and different issues that they're trying to solve. Right. In the early days, it was really common. It was normally younger girls between 20, 28, 29, that kind of age bracket, who were just notoriously under eating and over exercising. Yeah. And I had a lot of girls come to me with issues from, you know, not having a menstrual cycle in months, some of them years, from under eating. Others just having a complete hormonal imbalance from not getting enough nutrients, normally down to low dietary fat. And then once we brought up the calories and the healthy fats, a lot of the issues that they had went away. But it's really difficult. It's actually easier to get somebody who notoriously overeats to start undereating, because if you change even a small bit of their food intake and increase their nutrients and their fiber, their hunger levels on a by and large tend to decrease naturally.
Oh, yes.
That doesn't work as well in the reverse, because a lot of people have a block. They think that, oh, actually, if I eat more, I'm just going to put on weight, or I'm going to put on body fat. And in a lot of cases, that isn't what happens. And I always had to shift the thinking of those. And it wasn't all, it was men as well. It's just, it was predominantly females that had happened that I was working with. And I would shift them. I had to educate them on metabolism. And I'd explain to them, look, the more lean muscle tissue you have, the faster your metabolic rate, i.e. you'll burn more calories while you're resting. So you'll be sitting at home watching Netflix and you'll be continually burning calories. You become a calorie burning machine. And normally that shift would sometimes work as a light bulb. And then we could increase the food and then they have to test it. Normally we'd give a 2 week window of a calorie increase or a food increase. And they'd see, well, actually, I didn't get fat. Actually, I think I got a bit leaner with the increase in calories because I changed up the training, etc. And then that becomes the new story. That becomes the new evidence support of what they're doing. And then you're able to build upon that. I normally have to come at it from kind of a Trojan horse angle again. I normally have to explain about hormonal balance. I find that nearly any female that I've worked with over the past decade now at this point, and I've got a daughter at home, she's nearly 9. So I'm very clued in from early age up until pre-menopausal. And then that's where I kind of, I don't work with menopausal age group. I have experts that I tend to send them to.
Oh, just okay.
Because there's better people that can serve than me. So I tend to say, look, I'm not your coach for that. There's actually better people out here that you can work with. And I normally recommend those coaches. Like, I'm very much stay in my lane. I know who I can serve. And then I'm happy to recommend any coach that I think would be a better fit. Because ultimately, it's about finding who's going to be the best fit for you as a coach and a trainer.
That's a bummer. I'm postmenopausal. You're fabulous. But oh, well. Anyway.
Well, I have recommendations. I'll give you recommendations. Yeah. But I always find, because women, compared to men, if we're going just off the, you know, general, well, two genders without going too outside of that, from a hormonal standpoint, men don't have issues normally until they kind of hit late 30s and they see a testosterone drop. Women have it from the age of 9 or 10, where they're more clued into hormones, although they might not know at 19, 11 what's going on. They're having hormonal shifts. Guys aren't as much clued into that, although we go through it in teenage years as well. It's just not as like in our face, and we're not as open and talking about it. So when I chat to a female about dietary fat from a hormonal standpoint, that this is what you want. You want to balance your hormones, to keep the language really simple. You can't do that if your fats are too low. You literally can't. It's like trying to drive your car without any gas. I was like, you can't fuel that. You can't actually support and balance hormones purely on carbohydrates and protein alone. You need healthy fats for that. So normally when you come at that angle, and once you reintroduce it in a slow way, you know, I don't load somebody up with 100 grams of dietary fat, you know, 900,000, 2,000 calories worth of fat, but a slow increase. And you tend to notice the effects very quickly, because our brains are predominantly made up of fat. So you tend to notice the effects quickly. They feel better. They feel more energized. They can have a reduction in other hormonal-based symptoms, and then they convert quite easily because they feel it. It's one of those that you don't see the difference. You just have to trust the process with certain goals. With an increase in dietary fat, you'll notice it within a couple of days and a week. So you'll start to see the benefits. So it's a lot easier to get buy-in from people.
Oh, that's really interesting. Now, going back to the laziness, there was one about apathy.
Apathy is an interesting one. I've done it myself. It's probably one of the lower down on the list in terms of frequency. But I always think of like Aesop's fable, like the sour grapes, the fox trying to get the grapes, and he jumps and he's trying to get these grapes up that are high up in a tree that look really delicious. And then he jumps and he tries and he can't get them. And then he just goes, you know what? I actually think those grapes are probably sour anyway. I don't want them. That's what sour grapes means in terms of the expression.
Oh, I never knew where that came from.
Yeah, that's the expression.
I didn't know that.
That's apathy. It's the convincing yourself that, oh, I don't really care about that. And I get it, because I've done it myself in the past. It's normally down to seeing the amount of work that will go into a goal. And then you somehow convince yourself you don't want to do it. Now, there's also legitimately, you see how much work needs to go into something and you think, actually, I'm not willing to pay that cost. That's totally different. They're two different things.
Right.
But if you're somebody that is overweight, for example, just to use weight as an example, and you're not happy and you love to just drop a bit of weight, you think you'd move better, you'd be healthier over the long term, you'd feel more confident in your clothes or without clothes, and you see that actually I probably have to look at my food or work with a coach or, you know, join a gym, and that's the dreaded gym for some people. You can do this by just movement and going for step counts. It's nearly 90% nutrition really, and sleep effectively. You know, to be honest, if we're breaking it down, particularly weight loss as a goal, it's different. If you want to get stronger or fitter, you have to work out and elevate heart rate, etc. But just for pure weight loss, nutrition and sleep is enough. But people will convince themselves, oh, actually, you know, I'm really happy the way that I am. And as I said, I'm the first to be like, self-love, self-acceptance is important, but not fake self-love or fake self-acceptance where you've decided that, oh, okay, I'm just going to be happy here because I don't actually want to put in the work, or I'm afraid, or if I might fail. That's a big thing for people. Particularly if it came from a fad diet background or have a history of doing diets and then rebounding or not staying on track with it, that becomes programmed. You become nearly expectant of failure. And that's where apathy can come, because you're like, well, I'm not just going to follow this one more diet. It's going to be one more that I do for 6 weeks, 3 months, get great results, and then I fall off track and I'm going to be back where I was right now in 6 months' time. So I get where it comes from. It's just important to unpack that, because if you do want to go after it, weight loss, or might be entrepreneurial with the business, or can be relationship based. It shows up in lots of different shapes and forms for people. It's important to go after that thing, you know, and just take the first step, do what you can. And then, you know, it's process over outcome. My brain tattoo, Lisa, is a quote. I think it's normally attributed to Buddha, that like, if you can't be happy on the journey, how do you expect to be happy at a destination? And that's, I think, great. If you can make your nutrition, your life, your business, your relationship, all process driven, where you love the journey, the destination just becomes part of it. And I think that's a nice little reframe if someone struggles with the athlete.
I do too. What are your thoughts on Ozempic and Wegovy and now Zeb something? What do you think about those, especially if you don't have diabetes?
I'm only really familiar with Ozempic because I'm researching that at the minute. I've got Johan Hari coming on my podcast again. Nice. He wrote Lost Connections, Soul and Focus, incredible author. But he has a book on this now, so I'm going through it at the minute.
I gotta get that.
Yeah, fantastic. But I have a bit of a mixed, I think it's very context dependent.
Sure.
With any medication, and that goes all the way from mental health and anxiety and depression to weight loss to body composition, some people need that. If you're really struggling with 0 to 1 and there's nothing you can do, that can be the stepping stone to positive life changes. And I think in that context, it's probably going to be okay. Misprescribed or taken by the wrong individuals is literally one of the worst things you can do.
Yeah.
And that's where my fear is, that we can, in some cases, look for the short fix or the immediate gratification of, if I take this pill, I take this medicine, I take this tablet or whatever it is.
Right.
And I can shorten the time it takes me to get to my desired weight. That's not a good approach. That's not a good way to do, I would argue, probably anything in life. And if anything, with new medications like this, and I don't want to speak out of turn because I only have basic knowledge on this based on the research I'm doing currently, anything that hasn't been around for a couple of decades, there isn't enough research on the negative impacts and effects. Nobody knows. And that's always what I'd be worried about. Things like, you know, creatine, for example, as a supplement, it's been researched for the last 20 years, 30 years. There's pretty decent evidence that there's no real long-term effects, assuming no underlying kidney issues.
Right.
So you can say, look, creatine's probably going to be okay for you. There's no way we can say that about a drug yet. So I'm always kind of hesitant, but I think people should be cautious.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. My husband was saying the same thing. And one of the things that bugs me is the number of celebrities. Everybody's almost, I think, now I'm being judgy, but everybody looks kind of too thin. Like, there's an Ozempic look, I think. I probably didn't coin that, but they're just looking kind of skeletal.
Yeah.
It's not good. And then that's such a bad example for young girls and women. Like, what happened to just, it's almost like politics. Everybody, like, there's everybody so extreme. Can we get back to the middle? Can we get back to the middle with looks? Can we get back to the middle? Like, everything is too much. The thing I worry about is that people might take it anyway, even if they're having horrible diarrhea, horrible constipation. Like, why is that? And what's going on in their gut? And what are the long-term effects? And what's that doing to their gut microbiome? And things that we don't know. That's what makes me nervous.
Yeah, that's the shocking reality of it. And I always think, and I put this in, it was in one of the books, but I can't remember which one, about if you ate a McDonald's hamburger tomorrow and instantly put on 30 pounds, you'd never eat a McDonald's hamburger again. Or if you smoked a cigarette and got cancer tomorrow, you'd never smoke a cigarette again. And with things like this, it's very similar. If you took a weight loss drug and woke up the next day, lost your weight, but you knew you were going to be dead or have a horrible life, you wouldn't take it. We don't know the answer to that. So it's really important that with anything that hasn't been around long enough to be studied, you can see that celebrities are taking it. And that's kind of I have a bit of a pet peeve with that on as well, because it tends to filter down. Unfortunately, it's top down. And it's just being aware that there's alternative ways to do this. There's healthier ways to do this. You don't know the long-term side effects. And if I said to you now, right, yes, you'll lose weight and you'll get skinnier, but you'll shave 20 years off your life, you might not. Hey, you don't know.
Like, you also lose muscle.
Yeah. Well, and ultimately, the long-term way to lose weight is to increase your metabolic rate, which is by building lean muscle tissue. Like,
right.
That's something that people, like, it's effectively, like the analogy I use, building lean muscle tissue to lose body fat is like making money while you sleep. That's how you do it. It keeps you burning calories while you're resting, while you're sleeping, while you're doing other things. So if you can build lean muscle tissue with resistance and strength training, you'll continually burn calories for the day. It's like making money while you sleep. So that gets removed, because if you reduce your lean muscle tissue with a drug for whatever reason, it can have a negative impact on your metabolic rate. Again, those studies haven't been done. That's just basic metabolism 101. Anything that impacts it in a negative way is going to do that. So again, it's just awareness for people.
And tell us the name of this book again, and this gentleman you'll be interviewing.
Johan Hari. I've forgotten the name of his book now off the top of my head. I'm working my way through it, but I've forgotten the title. It's his new one. Johan is a multiple-time New York Times bestselling author. He's been on Oprah's Book Club multiple times. He's a great, incredible storyteller, incredible author. So excited to chat to him.
Oh, that's exciting. Now, speaking of podcasts, tell us about yours.
I love my podcast. It's similar to Lisa. It's just one of my favorite things that I do. I get to chat to incredible people. I get to do some solo episodes where I can just kind of talk and riff on topics that are important to me. And it's, again, it's opened so many doors in terms of conversations. It's shifted my thinking in so many different ways. I have so much more context now as a coach and as a trainer than I just didn't have a decade ago, because you're talking to people who sometimes hold very strong opinions on belief systems in nutrition and training that are completely opposite to mine. But I can sometimes then, when I get to chat to them directly, see why they think that way. And I'm like, okay, that makes sense. You asked me 5 or 10 years ago about any weight loss drug. I'm like, hard no, hard no. And then I'll talk to a doctor who works with severely obese people who literally can't do anything, that this potential drug can just get enough weight off that they can actually start moving more and it can build sustainable habits. And I'm like, oh, actually, I never thought about it like that. So the podcast has shifted and really opened my mind to potential avenues for health and wellness for people in all directions.
Yeah. Something for me now that I'm in my 50s is I want to be functional as I get older. Like I'm not saying I don't care how I look, because that would be a lie. But if I have a little tummy, but it really doesn't affect my health. One of the things, and I think that's tough with the body positivity movement. For example, I have a friend who's very overweight. And for her, it's like, this is my body and I accept it. I love it. Now she's in her 50s and her feet hurt all the time and her knees hurt all the time. And it's not about losing weight to please society, because she's a bit of a rebel, right? And be accepted. It's about her movement. And I think that's what's hard about it. And again, that's up to each individual person. But that's where, you know, when I was younger, I'd be like, yeah, go, go. And now I'm like, well, that's fine, except you're not going to move as well. So how can we figure this out where maybe you still are a big person, but you're not so big that you're in pain?
The body positivity movement for me feels like the baby being thrown out with the bathwater. That's what I always think of when I think of that movement. In its original form, I loved it. Meaning that it's the underlying principle is accept yourself for how you look. You don't need to look a certain way to be beautiful. And I love that. As somebody who's a father of a daughter that has very strong women in my life, I love that message. But taken to its extreme as a one size fits all, it becomes a problem, because you can be 50 to 100 pounds overweight and love your body. I'm all for that. But when you start to bring in a health argument, that's where it breaks down. And you have to ask, well, actually, you know, your risk of all-cause mortality goes up the more weight you have on. If you're overweight, your risk of type 2 diabetes goes up. Your movement will go down. You'll have issues with your feet, your knees, your ankles, your hips. Right. These are all health issues. And I think it's important to marry the two together. I think it's really important to love the way that you look, accept yourself. That is a wonderful thing for everyone to do. Men, women, transgender, black, white, purple, everybody. I think it's an incredible message. But when you're talking about health, there are things you can't argue against. If you are 50 to 100 pounds overweight, all your risk for majority of diseases goes up and your life quality can decrease. So you can love yourself, but you can also be healthy. So I think once those two things are married, that's probably the perfect blend. One of the most important things, and I try and navigate through life, and I'm by far not the best person to offer advice on it, but I follow it myself, is you should always give yourself permission to change your mind on things. And you can feel a certain way in your 30s and your 40s and then hit your 50s and change. That's okay. That's just having an open mindset. You have new evidence, new life experiences. You might have listened to new podcasts or read new books with new information, and now you think differently. That's okay. Confirmation bias is is something you want to avoid as much as you can walking through this life, where you try and confirm your own best loved ideas and beliefs, and you only consume content that supports what you already believe. Sometimes you should look on the other side and so that you can question that. And that makes it okay to give yourself permission to change your mind. So people are in their 30s and 40s who might be, you know, 20, 30, 40 pounds overweight, and they don't have any health issues yet, but they start to develop some, you can change your mind and you can make the change then.
And it's okay. You're not turning your back, right? Like my friend now who's trying to lose some weight is like, oh my God, am I turning my... No, it's you got to put to me, your health is most important.
100%.
And you got to do what you got to do. Brian, you're fabulous. Is there anything we didn't talk about today? I hope you'll come back because I'm definitely
going to reach out. Oh, yeah, 100%. I love this. Yeah, definitely for round two, for sure.
In the meantime, tell us all the ways we can find you and your great work.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, the Brian Keane podcast, that's my foundation flagship. It's where we talk all things. We have everything there. And I know you've got a lot of people in a similar position to you. The podcast I did with Dr. Stacey Sims, who is an expert on all things menopause for women when it comes to training and nutrition. I highly recommend that podcast in particular. Then I'm on all the socials, so Instagram, Facebook, Brian Keane Fitness and everything.
Nice. Brian, this was so much fun. Everybody keep coming back to Health Power 5 days a week. Like Brian, I do some solo casts. I have a couple guests each week. We have a super good time. Everybody rate, review, and check out my clips on social media.
Thank you so much, Melissa.
A little plug. Thank you so much, Brian. This was super fun.
Well, that's it for our show today. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate you. And we would appreciate it if you could please rate and review and leave a comment, because the more you engage with our podcast, the more you will find it and help other people find it wherever they listen to their podcast. So be sure to follow us. I'm at Andrea Donsky and at Naturally Savvy. And Lisa?
At Lisa Davis, MPH.
Thank you so much. And please share this episode, because the more you share shows you care. We'll see you next time.